know what you came here to do. Knock, knock, so let me see you get loose.
It's going down for real.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, the coaching search. The known candidates have all been interviewed for the Browns, bringing their total to 7 over the weekend as they met on Friday night with Jerome Henderson, on Saturday with Matt Patricia, on Sunday Sean McDermott and Hugh Jackson. Two of the guys now off of the list. Adam Gase has signed on to be the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Jerome Henderson will be his defensive back coaches. Will be his defensive backs coach, I say, not one of them. So those two are off the list. I can tell you one name I told you going into the week, and I still want to hear from you guys. Who are your top candidates now that things have shook out? Who are you the most excited about? I know there's a ton of buzz for Hugh Jackson. There's a ton of buzz around Matt Patricia because people see the aeronautical engineer
both here,
background.
But everywhere. Because Hugh Jackson being linked to the New York Giants now, who've asked for permission to interview Hugh Jackson, but also San Francisco, another team who has Hugh Jackson probably as number one on their list right now.
Hugh Jackson, many around the league see as maybe the top coaching candidate, given that he's been a coach before. It'll be a second go-around, people like that. With Hugh Jackson, I think the only question is, and I've talked to some people about him, but I think that he would be great. It'll be interesting to see what kind of situation he wants to inherit. Does he want to go with an established quarterback like Eli? Does he want to have the opportunity to draft a young quarterback like you would here or San Francisco? Does he buy in to what the Browns are doing? I don't know. But one name that's gaining a lot of steam around the NFL, not just for the Browns job, but maybe for his own team's job, maybe for the New York Giants job, and that's Terrell Austin. Over the weekend, his name in terms of what – you know, you hear from people around the league, you hear, oh, so-and-so had an impressive interview. Well, the one guy that apparently has knocked every single one of his interviews out of the park was Terrell Austin.
Well, I think the best case to back up those rumors, the news coming out of those places about what a great interview is that second interview. Because most likely, that second interview that a team will have, by the time it's over, if he is by far and away that good in an interview setting and has wowed that team, probably going to be a job offer after that second interview. Kind of the way the Adam Gase process went with the Miami Dolphins. First interview, both here and Miami, and at about the same time, and it was Miami's second interview that came with a job offer because they had, you know, they were laser focused on being aggressive in winning Adam Gase, and Adam Gase fitting what they do there. And I think, you know, with Ryan Tannehill as a quarterback, a young kid who probably regressed after, you know, getting his big contract, needs to lock arms with a guy like Adam Gase, and hopefully what has happened both with Peyton Manning and with Jay Cutler this year, that Ryan Tannehill can become the franchise quarterback that the Miami Dolphins paid him to be.
Yeah, and that's something that he's, you know, he's excited to work at. Gase is a guy that is well-regarded. It'll be interesting to see. The feedback that I've gotten is from people just around the league, and this isn't a Browns feedback, this is people from around the league with Gase, is that super impressive offensive mind, super phenomenal with quarterbacks, understands the game. The big question, and what I think people are eager to see, is does he translate as a guy that is just a tremendous offensive coordinator and offensive mind, and how will that personality that he's used there translate into being the CEO of an NFL team, which is what you basically are as a head coach.
Right, and I think, as I said to you off air in reference to the Miami Dolphins job with Ryan Tannehill, Adam Gase is getting hired for that job, and probably throughout his interview process, as you already kind of said, in hiring his DB coach, and I think Vance Joseph, another guy who's the defensive back coach for the Cincinnati Bengals, probably going to get that defensive coordinator job in Miami.
He is, yep.
Or he is. Okay.
Yep.
I had the opportunity to spend time with him in San Francisco as a part of Mike Singletary's staff. Great man, great coach, very relatable. I say a lot of the same things I did about him that I did Jim Tomasula. Never thought Jim Tomasula was the right guy to be a head coach in the National Football League, but a great defensive mind, breaks things down, leader of men, accountable. So he's going to fit that Miami system. But my whole point of being is, in Miami's situation, you can hire that offensive, and I'll call him Norv Turner-ish type of personality as your head coach, But and what he probably had to sell the Miami Dolphins is Adam Gase's ability to surround him with other great football minds, other great leader of men
yep.
on his staff that will get the buy-ins from Ndamukong Suh and the other players from the defensive side, which kind of all year long had been up and down with the investment they put into a guy like. But to speak specifically about the Cleveland Browns job, it's a unique job. It's a unique job because of what we've been up against for the last 15 years. It's a unique job because we don't have a franchise quarterback. It's a unique job because of the regimes that have turned over so quickly, and a unique job now more than ever because of the process that we've put in place with the promotion of Sashi Brown and the hiring of Paul D. Podesta.
I can tell you from talking to some people around the league that the response in these interviews and about what we're doing, there's obviously some skepticism, but there's actually a lot more support and intrigue in what the Browns are doing, I think, than people might expect. We'll see what happens, obviously, as it shakes out. Do they get the guy that they wanted? Now, we're with our producer, Jason Gibbs, as well today. Gibbs, how are you, brother?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Hey, Gibbs, good. And also, too, before we get into it, share with us what happened in your fantasy league this year.
Nothing positive, that's for sure.
So where'd you finish? How many teams?
There were 12.
And where'd you finish?
I think we finished like 8th, 9th.
I actually was 11th. But anyway, go ahead, Nathan, with your question.
Wow.
Wow.
It was rough. It was not a
I had to get it in, man.
No. He was texting me Friday night.
Was he
Dude,
good?
Really? Look at this. You really are this bad?
I spent time with Pat Coyne and Tracy Coyne, who's a huge friend of the show. She listens all the time. And he's like
– She puts up with a lot of crap.
She does.
God bless her.
Yeah, you're right. And he literally shows me, like, he screenshots their, like, the in the app, the fantasy standings and the way they finished. And I go, where's Gibbs? And he like, and I'm looking for something that looks similar to what Gibbs would name his team. And he's like, keeps scrolling up to get down to the bottom. Yeah. And so I was like, send that to me. So I sent it to Gibbs Friday night and just had to give him some stuff.
Bad year. Bad year.
Rough year. So one of the things we were obviously talking about Adam Gase there, and you said Ohio Business hot topic number one. Gase goes to the Dolphins. Why are people freaking out about not getting him? The Browns clearly have a plan. Should we panic that we didn't get Gase? I am certainly not convinced at any length that Gase was our top choice, and I don't know that he would have, you know, I think he was an interesting candidate, but I know that the pressure that was being put, and this was talking to an NFL source, the pressure that was being put on Adam Gase or by Adam Gase to be the first head coach hired, and this was coming, I think, a lot from his agent as well, turned some teams off. And he was, I believe, this is what I was told was a direct quote, he would take the first job he was offered. And I think that if you're the Browns and you know that he got the Miami Dolphins offer first, believe me when I tell you, other teams were contacted about getting into the bidding war for Adam Gase. None did, and he went with the Dolphins. So I think I'm not freaking out about it. Where do you get the sense that people are freaking out about it? And I think it's also irresponsible. People say that Adam Gase was the top choice for the Cleveland Browns because they interviewed him first. That logic is flawed if you look around the league. And number one, the only people who know the top choice are, it would be Sashi Brown, Paul D. Podesta, Jimmy and D. Haslam, and Jed Hughes. And by the way, you don't have a top choice until you go through your process
no,
and interview
absolutely.
Everybody.
Right. And I think the one bit of skepticism that Cleveland Browns fans might have is, oh, we're interviewing 7. We've interviewed 7 so far. Adam Gase was one of them, and we missed out on Adam Gase. There's got to be a mutual, you know, want to for both parties.
Both sides.
Adam Gase wanted to be, if he showed the willingness to become the Cleveland Browns next head football coach and he was up for this challenge to fit in to what we have going on here, I'm sure a job offer, if he was someone we wanted, would have came right along with that in that conversation.
But I wouldn't have, at least I wouldn't have wanted to make him an offer on that time
no.
frame before I'd spoken
no.
with Matt Patricia, Hugh Sean Jackson, Sean
McDermott. Correct.
I
agree 100%. You're right.
And that's the way it went down. Where do you get the sense that there's people freaking out, Gibbs? Are you freaking out?
No, but on Saturday, especially then when Gase took the Cowboys secondary coach.
Yeah.
On Twitter, people were losing their minds.
Why?
They were like, that was the number one pick of the Browns. And again,
yeah, how do
it's
people,
not
how
mine.
How would people even claim to know that?
You know, I think it's just interesting. You know, people freak out when guys start coming off the board that the Browns have interviewed. Well, he didn't want to come here. Or, you know.
That's just natural thought process for a Browns
it's
fan.
Exactly. It's a fan base that is frankly uneasy right now with this coaching search, I think.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of questions. Is the coach going to buy into the new analytics scheme? They have to be able to buy in. Is that really limiting your talent pool?
What have you done any more of your own, Gibbs, looking at some of these coaching candidates? I think everybody knows Hugh pretty well. I think everybody's familiar with Patricia now. He's kind of like the buzz guy around Cleveland because, you know, his background's an aeronautical engineer. I mean, look at his beard. He wears NWO shirts, and certainly people like him. And I've talked to some players who played for him and that were that are huge fans of Matt Patricia's. Let me say that. You know, the one guy that it continues to get a lot of positive buzz, as I was saying, from around the league, Terrell Austin. I wasn't as familiar with him. I did some research on him over the weekend and is apparently a great leader of men. And people are very excited about him. And apparently he would be, if there were a decision to be made in Detroit about Jim Caldwell, it would be a very high likelihood that he would just be promoted into the head coaching job there.
Yeah. I think Caldwell is meeting with the Detroit Brass today. This afternoon.
Today. So. Yes. So what have you kind of done anymore? Where are you at?
I'm intrigued by McDermott.
Okay.
I think he's done a nice job there, and I feel like he might be a sleeper, a guy that a lot of people are talking about.
And Gibbs, not to cut you off, but to continue on that conversation, the one thing that I can say about Sean McDermott, you know, having spent some time in Philadelphia and that with the training camp prior to ending up in San Francisco, was he was very, when I was with him, he was very rough around the edges. And Jim Johnson was the name that was escaping me. That was the longtime defensive coordinator that he grew up kind of in that system that had passed away with Philadelphia. Sean took over as defensive coordinator, but rough around the edges, super tough guy. But the one thing that I can say about Sean that I'm sure naturally happens or has happened that puts his name in the conversation to be interviewed as a head football coach is not the success that he's had, particularly as a defense coordinator with the Panthers, because they've been loaded, Luke Kuechly, and what they've done and the successes. The culture that I would imagine Ron Rivera has there in Carolina and Sean McDermott being a part of that and help progress that culture and keep it in the right direction is a lot of what probably is transferred to why he is, you know, the success on the field and who he is off the field in that culture and as a coach and as a person, because of who Ron Rivera is and the success they've had in Carolina, is why his name just has naturally and organically fallen into it's about time that he becomes a head coach.
I wonder if Dave Taub's name is going to come up. We talked about him on Friday as a special teams coordinator that many people in the NFL thinks could be a very good head coach in the National Football League. When you start off a playoff game with a kick return for a touchdown that is so well designed that the guy's in the clear by his own 25-yard line, I wonder if that helps his case. We will talk about the wild card games when we come back. We've got some sound from Mel Kiper, who had some advice for Adam Gase. We've got sound from the weekend calls and tweets. We can talk about the Bleacher Report article, if you guys want to, that Insider Buzz top GM candidates have no interest in the Browns job. And what we think about that. Obviously, it's National Championship Day in college football.
Does anybody care about the National Championship?
Not me.
Not here, because I think geographically speaking, people are upset that Ohio State's not in. I just had a phone call with one of our good friends, Scott Lichtenstein, who was a raving lunatic when I brought up the notion that I felt Jim Harbaugh was a better football coach than Urban Meyer. He was literally absolutely beside himself, yelling at me.
Pulling the phone away from your ear.
Yes, he was screaming at both of us.
I pitch.
As well as you should have.
Yeah.
There's been one good bowl game this year, TCU and Oregon. And that was good for a half.
And you know, it's funny, and people were saying, oh, well, the bowls are still. Once you got the college football playoff, first of all, I only care about the play. I think those other bowl games, I don't even understand why people are playing. I don't get it. I mean, I get the tradition and the pageantry, yada, yada, boom, ba, bing, whatever. But I'm interested in the playoff. I think the playoff should be expanded to eight teams, I mean. And I think it should be a nice, you know, a little bit of a tournament. I think the other reason people aren't as into it is the idiocy of putting those games on New Year's Eve.
Well, this year they put it on New Year's Eve because the Rose Bowl refused to move.
Well, I would tell the Rose Bowl, hey,
you want to be a part of the big
know
bowls?
Your role and shut your mouth. You'll move because I told you to.
Good luck with that.
I would have rather had the games be like it didn't even need to be on New Year's. It could have been that weekend. You know, weren't there?
You could have done them on Saturday.
Saturday, right?
Yep. And I would say this: the other thing. There's no buzz for the national championship game. I think you should do it the Friday before the playoffs start in the NFL. Do it Friday night. Play the championship game on Friday night going into the weekend, and then you got NFL games on Saturday. I think Sunday, there's because you're coming off of the NFL playoffs this weekend.
Yep.
And I just think you're kind of like, okay, this game isn't going to come close to what the other four did this
weekend.
Right.
You're right.
You're
right. And I think it's a combination of all those things. For one, A, it's not Ohio State. You know, their season's done. So in some cases, people in Ohio, especially now that Cincinnati has lost, you turn off the switch, the football switch, because basically, and you go all in on the Cavs because you got no Bengals, you got no Buckeyes, you got no Browns, right? So our football season is over. And I think you look at the two programs, Clemson, it's like, you know, flying by the seat of their pants all season, even though they went undefeated, because they're predominantly not one of the power 10 or 15 teams that compete for a national championship. You're over Bama because you're over Nick Saban. You're over that they had another running back that won a Heisman that's not going to do anything in the National Football League. So you're over that whole scene along with the NFL playoffs. And it seems to me, I think it's been a long time since we saw Clemson win. It's been a long time since we saw Bama beat Michigan State, and the fact that they beat another Big Ten team. It just sets up for someone in Ohio that's a football fan to not care.
Yeah.
Like tonight, I'm going to watch like whatever American Idol or catch up on DVRs instead of watching a football game, which the game of football runs through my veins, but I could care less who wins this game.
I'd say only hardcore college football fans in this area or those who like the window.
I was just going to say that. That floating window.
That window. The kid's window. The kid's friend, the window. That would be the only ones that I would say are super into. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll go through the four wild card games. Obviously, a little bit of a Cleveland feel to one of them. And then a little bit of a Cleveland feel to the other two with some crazy losses, victory or defeat snatched from the jaws of victory in two of the games over the weekend. How about Ben Roethlisberger? I know that you're not supposed to like him, I know, in this area, but come on. The guy's shoulders hanging. He can't throw the ball more than 5 yards, and he gets out there and completes some passes and wills his team to victory with the help of the Bengals.
Pac-Man said he was faking too.
We'll talk about all that and much, much more when we return here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. Again, Ohio Business Machines, hot topics of the day. Are you freaked out that Adam Gase went to the Dolphins? What do you think? What do you want after week one of this coaching search? What are you hoping for the Browns? By the way, next drawing Wednesday, $1.3 billion.
Potentially $1.3 billion.
I totally forgot. By the way, that should just tell you guys how bad the odds are. That means that basically $500 million across this country were spent.
Okay, I don't want to talk about that conversation. What would you do with $700 million that you wouldn't do with $330 million?
It's like $800 million, isn't it?
What?
Well, 800. Okay. What would you do with 800 million that you wouldn't do with 400 if you won last week?
I'm mean, nothing.
I don't you know what? Difference. I'm debating if I'm coming to work.
You are now?
Yeah. 800 million?
Why don't you just buy your company?
Good.
Because then it's just, you're going to be you could fire
anyone that you had a grievance with.
I'm
the owner. You're fired.
Platinum Sledge?
Silver Sledge. Oh, good. All right, let's go through these wild card
Bronze
games.
Ball peen.
Chiefs. We give Mo Pedman a job. Mo Pedman, a permanent hire.
I love the people that are making fun of us talking college football on Twitter, by the way.
What do they say?
At Common Man DZ, the first segment of Browns Daily just broke the record for most horribly uneducated college football hot takes in a sports radio program. Did we have hot takes?
What was a hot take?
Did I even say anything?
Other than playing the two games was a mistake on New Year's Eve, and if that's a hot take, then consider me on fire. And the second one was that I think the playoffs should be expanded to 8 teams. What's wrong with that? And I don't love, like, the stupid tuna bowl and the, you know,
Battle Frog Fiesta Bowl.
And the, like, whatever. There's bowls of, who cares?
Other than maybe some credits being exchanged, there's nothing.
Right, that's just window. Yeah. That's straight window. That's all that is. Exactly. That's pure window.
We don't know anything about college football.
Houston at Kansas City. 30-0. The Chiefs went out there and beat the Texans. The quarterback of the Houston Texans, 4 interceptions, a lost fumble on the day, 5 turnovers in what was an epically poor performance, and the Chiefs dominated. They looked pretty good, and if you remember, Do you guys remember it was the game that had people calling for Tom Brady to be replaced by Jimmy Garoppolo last year? Was the last time that the Chiefs and the Patriots played. That was the On to Cincinnati press conference from Bill Belichick. I believe it was 44-14, if I'm not mistaken, and that's because of a late Garoppolo touchdown. This Chiefs team, it's amazing. I felt like they dialed it back against us, and they did what they had to do to win. And then they came out and just absolutely annihilated the Houston Texans.
And I think what's scary about the playoffs is for any team running the Chiefs, and I know Bill Belichick's already had a comment come out about how to prep for this football team, is there any team right now hotter than the Kansas City Chiefs?
I don't know.
I mean, what, 10 in a row, including a playoff game?
Yeah, 11 in a row.
11 in a row, including a playoff game, on the road. You know, and I understand the opponent comes from, you know, predominantly a weak division, but they're a team right now, and I think the one cool thing that I like about the Chiefs in general is the Chiefs have not deviated from how they win football games.
Absolutely not.
They're not. They're not trying to be somebody they're not. They're not trying to put the quarterback, and I think in some cases, I'll, you know, swirl this conversation into how it's relevant to the Browns. The Browns with Josh McCown have a Josh McCown offense. The offense changes slightly when you have a guy like Johnny Manziel. When you have a quarterback that the team has paid very well in Alex Smith,
sure,
and they've gone all in that this is your franchise quarterback, you customize everything you do, not only offensively, not only in your play calling, but as an organization, to win football games the way that you can win football games. And that's what they've done.
Absolutely. And let me say this. I thought the game, the Houston Texans game, should be all the people. Anybody who thinks, okay, not that people love Joey Bosa. You're not wrong for loving Joey Bosa. I believe Joey Bosa will be a great player.
Sure.
That Houston Texans game proved to me once and for all, not that I didn't believe it before because you know I did, if you like Jared Goff or any other quarterback in this draft for the Cleveland Browns, and you believe that you will have a top half of the NFL quarterback, a franchise quarterback, top 16 in the NFL, you have to be, after watching that Texans game, if you didn't come away with the takeaway that getting the quarterback is more important than getting J.J. Watt, you're not paying attention.
Correct.
J.J. Watt is the best defensive player in the National Football League. Nobody with Brian Hoyer, Brandon Whedon, whoever they were going to trot out there,
Mallett, Yates.
Nobody believed that Houston was a danger to win the Super Bowl. Why?
Which is your goal.
Which is your goal. Which is the only goal of the organization. Why? Because they didn't have the quarterback. And that game was just a microcosm of that. J.J. Watt, great player. Brian Hoyer, not a great quarterback. Struggled. They had no chance. Get the quarterback. 9 of the last 14 Super Bowls have been won by quarterbacks that are playing this coming weekend. 9 of the last 14 Super Bowls have been won by the quarterbacks playing this weekend. Having a good quarterback is all that matters in the National Football League at the end of the day. You look at great coaches, you look at stability. Where's stability? Where are great coaches? Where you have quarterbacks. Just the fact. Just the fact of it. So that is something that I think this game hammered home to me. If you think Jared Goff or any of the other quarterbacks, I think it's Goff, but if you think those guys are franchise quarterbacks, you don't let one of them go to get the next J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt is great. J.J. Watt will never.
But he's a piece, not the piece.
He will never win a Super Bowl unless they get a top half of the NFL quarterback.
I agree.
Won't happen. So that's there. Is that a hot take for you, Gibbs? Is that hot enough for you?
It's hot.
Hot,
sizzling.
Fire.
Steaming hot. But I truly believe it. And that game was the absolute epitome of it. And by the way, I heard Bill Polian say on SiriusXM NFL Radio this morning that Bill O'Brien should get some serious votes for Coach of the Year. He said not only did he take this team to the playoffs, or that he won the division, took them to the playoffs with 4 quarterbacks who are incapable of playing in the National Football
just
League.
I mean, I just remember going back, and what game was it that they played in prime time
Cincinnati,
or on a holiday that
they won?
Bill O'Brien was like about to quit. They were that bad on the football field.
Oh, no, it wasn't Cincinnati. That was when they won. T.J. Yates came in and they threw one touchdown.
Right.
And one.
No, I'm talking about like even earlier in
it
the
season. It was early in the season.
Early in the season, they played a primetime football game. I don't remember who they were playing. They were at home, and it wasn't going well. It was the game Mallett got hurt. Where he got hurt, Hoyer went back in.
Indianapolis.
That game.
Yep.
Right?
Thursday night football.
And I could not, I mean, O'Brien looked fed up. The Texans looked miserable. They lost the football game, and I was like, they're as bad as Tennessee.
Yeah.
You know, that division is as bad with no luck, with no outright favorite to win the division. And to do what to Bill Polian's point, to do what O'Brien did and have the defense play the way they did and have the four quarterbacks and no Arian Foster to start the season, no Arian Foster to finish the season, and to have Hopkins have the season that he has had and the career thus far in Houston with who he's receiving the football from, he, like Bill O'Brien, needs to be commended for their job this year.
Absolutely. You got to get that quarterback first, and that's why. Watch that game. You know how good J.J. Watt is. By the way, am I the only person, when you guys saw J.J. Watt go into the game at quarterback, I had one thought go through my mind, and after watching the tape back, would have been an automatic touchdown. That was the most obvious situation in the history of football. The guy played quarterback in high school, J.J. Watt. Give him the ball, have him do the Tebow where he fakes two steps in like he's running, and then jumps up and throws a little pass to a tight end who slipped out. If you watch the Kansas City defense, they didn't even think for 1 second that was possible. They all went to the ball, and one of the tight ends would have been wide open. Why doesn't somebody think of that? That would have been the easiest. And what a genius. What a genius play. You put Will Fork in, you give him the ball, he's going to run behind Will Fork, he takes two steps down, boop, easiest touchdown in the history of the NFL.
I mean, Will Fork couldn't even barely get out of a stance to give him
a
push.
It would have been the easiest touchdown in the history of the league.
I agree.
Why didn't they do that? Why do the obvious? Everybody knew you were doing that. Come on. And then you throw an interception on the next play with your real quarterback. Come on. What did you think of that Houston game, Gibbs?
I was busy doing a lot of other things in preparation so I could watch the 8 o'clock game. I had it on. More importantly, I was just kind of like, come on, is he going to throw another one here? Is he going to throw another one? And then listening to John Gruden crucify Brian Hoyer. And I like Brian. We've gone back and forth on this show about it. I have no issues with Brian Hoyer. But it got to the point where the only thing left for Gruden to say was, this guy shouldn't be playing in the league. He said everything but that, I feel like.
Bill Polian said it this morning on SiriusXM NFL Radio. But look. When somebody said that the saddest chant in the history of the NFL happened during that game, when the fans of the Houston Texans were literally chanting, "We want Whedon." That was not good.
Should they have gone to him?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Did you see have you seen the Vine of DeAndre Hopkins?
No.
After the second interceptions, Hopkins comes to the sideline and is pissed and goes, "Get that mother beat the F out of here. Like, get him out of the game." Hopkins was losing it.
Clearly that worked. I mean, because as bad as he played in the first half, they're down 13-0.
They're still in the game.
And they get the ball to start the second half.
Unbelievable. They're still in the game.
Epic fail.
And that's why Bill O'Brien won't get coach of the year.
Bam.
Would you have loved it, though? What if he did that play with Watt where he faked, like, the Tebow one, where he fakes the quarterback run and then just popped? It would have been the easiest touchdown ever.
Well, again, as bad as that play was, the Bengals' two-point conversion once they took the lead in the fourth quarter was just as horrible.
If I'm in a coaching interview with Hugh Jackson, and I know the Browns were and the 49ers were the day after, I'm asking why in the world on your most important two-point conversion of the entire season is A.J. Green not on the field? Explain that to me.
Why aren't you going into the end zone? Because they tried that dump-off, swing pass, whatever you want to call it, the entire game, and it hadn't done anything.
Yeah.
Why is A.J. Green not on the field? Your best player needs to be on the field for your best play. I would want to know that. That's something that I would want to know, just like Terrell Austin. Why were you playing the formation that you're playing against at Green Bay that allowed that Hail Mary? Where was Calvin Johnson? I need to know these things. All right, we'll come back. We'll take a look at Pittsburgh, Cincinnati. Plus, you guys are sitting on the phone, so we'll get to those phone calls after this. Kansas City goes to New England in the next round of the playoffs. We're through that one game. Some heartbreak all around and some crazy finishes. Pittsburgh, Cincy, Seattle, Minnesota.
Come on.
Ouch.
Come on.
Ouch.
Chip shot.
Chip shot, indeed. All right, we'll be back with more. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. We're going to go to the phone lines before we get into the Steelers and the Bengals. Let's go to the phone lines now, and we're going to start off with Rodney on a cell talking about that game. Rodney.
Well, guys, yeah. First of all, I do agree with you about the quarterback over the defensive end. It's just this draft, the kid from Memphis and that Goff, I'm not sold on either one of them. The big games, they look bad in them, and they're, you know, when they're playing tough competition, they don't look good. So that scares me with the quarterbacks. But the Steelers and the Cincinnati game is something that I've been complaining about for 5 years. Now, the Browns are horrible. They've done so many things wrong. But you know why they lead the league in concussions? Because of hits like that, and they play those teams, that's four games. That's not counting the games against Ray Lewis, who's a dirty player. When Polamalu used to jump over the line leading with his helmet all the time, Harrison from Pittsburgh, those, and that Burbick from Cincinnati, those are some of the dirtiest players in the league, and we have to face those guys six times a year.
Yeah, it is part of it, and I know multiple concussions came against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think they're physical. In your division, these are physical games. They're rivalry games. I thought that the Bengals lost their cool, and as a result, they lost the game. I was, you know, the hit by Burfict, if you want, go back and watch the hit that he put on Max Williams from the week before, was even worse. He's obviously a guy that has played well, and what a feeling, right, to go from being the hero to get the interception, and he runs into the locker room, and they think it's over, and then all of a sudden, it's, you know, this ends up happening. He costs his team there. Joey Porter had no business being on the field, and according to reports are true, he had no business being out there talking trash, calling people out, and getting the response from Pac-Man Jones that led to the second 15-yard penalty. But from that game, the Bengals did Bengals things. They bungled it, as people talk about. They are now 0-7 in the playoffs under Marvin Lewis. They've lost in the playoffs in the first round 5 years in a row. They still haven't won a playoff game. And the Steelers find a way to win. Ryan Shazier played one of the best games of his career. Two huge turnovers, showed the speed, the sideline to sideline.
He's a Buckeye.
In the National Football League, getting it done. And how about Ben Roethlisberger? You can't, I don't know, maybe you guys are such diehard Browns fans that I got goosebumps when he was coming back in, like Willis Reed, and you could tell he couldn't throw the ball down the field, but he was still making the throws. Come on.
Okay.
Come on.
That's fine. You can get your goosebumps.
Did you enjoy that, Gibbs? You said you made your preps for the nighttime game. What did you think?
He's taking calls right now. But
what does that even mean?
How about this? So this is the first Steelers win in the playoffs since the year the Green Bay Packers beat the Steelers in the Super Bowl. So to you, is Mike Tomlin's job in jeopardy if they don't win yesterday? At all?
No.
Not even the slightest bit?
No. And I think they did a very good, I thought, you know, people calling for Marvin Lewis's head, I thought it was ridiculous in Cincinnati. I am told, though, that if they were to move on from Marvin Lewis, Hugh Jackson would have been their guy.
Okay.
So it just tells you how they feel about him inside that building. But Marvin Lewis, he's been a great coach. They need to get it done, though. They need to find a way to get over the hump, and they have not done it yet. They haven't been able to get over that hump. Very interesting to me that they have not found a way. Now, I think, honestly, if Andy Dalton plays in that game, I think it's a pretty easy win for Cincinnati.
I agree with that.
I think it's a pretty easy win.
I do.
Andy Dalton didn't play in the game.
And now the Steelers will most likely get D'Angelo Williams back this week? Is that?
It's not even certain. You don't know if Ben can play. Antonio Brown's in the concussion protocol. You don't know if he's going to be ready to play.
Does Landry Jones start, or is it Vic again?
Could be Landry Jones without Antonio Brown. And by the way, how about that catch by Martavis Bryant, the touchdown? Ben Roethlisberger called him out, said you need to make tough catches in the playoffs.
Does it have anything on Big Play Gare's catch?
It's similar. Maybe more graceful. Okay. A little bit more athletic grace in the flip there. Let's go to Reggie in Youngstown. Reggie.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good, man. Reg. How are you?
All right, good, good. Hey, I was just going to say, you know, first of all, go Cavs, man. I'm just about all about the Cavs pretty much right now. But I was going to also say, in general and stuff, Gates, I can't remember, fellas, exactly who he is. Maybe you all in a second will be able to tell me who he is. I can't remember. And I wanted to ask you again.
Who Adam Gase is?
Yeah.
He was the offensive coordinator in Denver the prior two seasons.
With John Fox.
With John Fox, and then went to Chicago and was the offensive coordinator in Chicago, where Jay Cutler had a good season. He was the quarterback coach the year that Tebow in Denver won the playoff game against the Steelers, to Demaryius Thomas, that pass, and helped guide. He's considered to be an offensive savant.
Okay, and also, how is it looking far as the offensive coordinator from Cincinnati? Did he come to the interview today or not?
So Hugh Jackson, and Cleveland Browns, Reg, let me just tell you, ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app will have all the latest on all of this stuff. And yes, Hugh Jackson interviewed with the Browns yesterday afternoon. At the website, Andrew Gribble will keep you up to date on what interviews are confirmed and also give you five things to know about all the candidates so you can have a better understanding of their backgrounds. Let's go to Jim in Brunswick now. Jim.
Hey, how you guys doing?
How are you doing?
Good, good. Yeah, to me, talking about that Cincy game, I don't understand. I mean, it's not just Cincy, just a lot of these teams and stuff in the NFL. Like, I mean, I played football a long, long time ago, very low level, right? And, of course, Matt played, and you know about football. But to me, I don't know if they don't coach this or they don't coach the coaches, but being smart is just so much a part of the game now, because, you know, teams are so close now. The average margin of victory is so close. So to me, like, turnovers and penalties, especially before snap and after kicker penalties, are huge in the game. And this is why I really, like, when you watch the Patriots play, and look, guys make plays, guys strip the ball, guys make a great catch, and that's going to happen in the game. But I don't understand, like you say, that play that Cincinnati ran. Okay, first of all, it's not a very good play. Second of all, he threw the ball backwards. If he drops it and Pittsburgh picks it up, they could run it back and have the lead. So why do you even think about doing that play? It doesn't make any sense. Not only do you have A.J. Green, you have
it was that. And as I said, that's one of the things that I would have asked Hugh Jackson. Why that play? I don't get it. I don't get why A.J. Green was there. It was risky. As you pointed out, they could have picked that up and gotten 2 points going the other way. Gotten the lead right back. Wouldn't that have been something? Oh, my goodness. That would have been something. All right, let's get one more call here. 216-578-0850. Although, I mean, I can't imagine that the Bengals feel like there was a worse way to lose than they did.
Nah.
But maybe Minnesota fans would argue. Maybe they'd argue with them. Let's go to Frank in Rochester. Frank, welcome.
Hey, Matt. How you doing, Jason?
Good. How are you?
Oh, good. Hey, listen, real quick, the only thing I'm looking for in a coach is that last game against Pittsburgh. That really got the back of my hair up. I am so sick and tired of Pittsburgh coming in here, Tomlin with his smirk. That's the dirtiest team, I don't care what anybody says, in football. We need somebody to come in here that's going to smack that team right in the face. I'm tired of the terrible towels. I'm tired of their fans. That's got to be a priority. And I'll listen to what you got to say. Thanks, guys.
You know, I want those games in December to be absolutely meaningful. I think you're exactly right. I on the sideline, hated that. I hated that game. I hated the environment. I hated the crowd. I hated so many Pittsburgh fans there. I hated everything about it.
And as you can tell, I mean, the national guys, what Boomer Esiason and Bill Cowher there on the desk, Bart Scott soon thereafter, you know, all different backgrounds, multiple different eras, different perspectives, and they all collectively said, Tony Gonzalez was another guy, different perspective, all collectively said how embarrassing that is for the Bengals, for those players, and more so, I think, when the NFL has an opportunity to showcase their product alone by itself on both Saturday and Sunday, that you come out of that weekend, you know, with three very good football games, you know, one blowout, but one of them has become the focal point because of all the wrong that went on in that football game.
Absolutely. All right, when we come back, we'll take a look at the NFC playoff games. We also will take your phone calls, 216-578-0850. The coaching search goes on for the Browns. What do you want them to do right now? Do you want them to throw an offer at Hugh Jackson, Terrell Austin, Doug Marrone, or do you want them to wait for Matt Patricia and Sean McDermott? Do you want them to wait and see how it all plays out? Let us know. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, programming update for you at 2 o'clock. Eric Scalavino from Patriots.com will join us to talk Matt Patricia. That's coming up at the top of this hour. Elk and Elk, serious lawyers for serious injuries. Call 1-800-ELK-OHIO. Elk and Elk, proud sponsor of the Cleveland Browns. Go Browns. Go back to the phone lines. Kevin in West Jefferson.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, man.
I agree with that previous caller that I feel the Steelers are the dirtiest team in the league. If you go back over the history with our team, some of the hits they've put on our guys, Massaquoi, Brady Quinn, McCoy.
What about Arthur Motes trying to rip Johnny Manziel's head off earlier
this
year?
These guys, because of the way that they play, that puts a target on their own player's back. You know, you look at that game against Cincinnati, they antagonized. I mean, nobody ever reported on what they said to Terrell Pryor. You know, there we were, first and goal at the 2-yard line, and they said something to Pryor, and Pryor reacted, and we got the personal foul. That took us out of that, you know, that situation in that last Steelers game. You know, you go back, Jack Lambert, you know, Jack Ham. I mean, they've always been a dirty, aggressive team, and the NFL kind of loves it because it makes them the bad guy. Well, you know, if I was a Haslam, I'd look for a coach that's going to come in here and say, look, if you're going to play the Steelers, you're going to play them just the same way. Because if you look at Turkey Jones when he slammed Bradshaw, did he do that to any other quarterback?
No, it was a beautiful
suplex.
The
only guy he hit like that.
Yeah,
that's because of the way they played against us. You don't see referees trying to separate teams at pregames, except if it's the Steelers. You know, you look at the way they were with the Ravens when Ray Lewis was there. You know, so I think what goes around comes around, and, you know, that's just my comment.
I hear you.
Take my call.
You got it. That's why, you know, Hugh Jackson, I don't know if you remember when he went to the Raiders, said, we're going to build a bully. And I think that's what you need to be in this division. This is a tough physical division. Tough physical teams have dominated this division as long as anyone can remember.
And if you don't have the right leader as the head coach of this football team in this division, it never trickles down into that locker room, into your practices, into their mentality, and eventually the team on the field will crack to the other teams in this division that do have that mentality and have what starts at the head coach in John Harbaugh, Mike Tomlin, and Marvin Lewis.
Absolutely, and people who say that the Steelers and Joey Porter baited him in, well, Joey Porter knew his audience, and yes, should he have been doing it? Nope, but he got his team a win.
And if Joey Porter, after doing that, went into the locker room and say, hey guys, NFL just hit me with $12,000, can we, and even though Joey Porter's made a lot of money in his career, the teammates that would give him $500, $1,000, to say it's worth it to help Joey Porter pay for his fine,
he's gonna get
they
fined.
Will absolutely pay for his fine. If asked.
I bet Ben Roethlisberger
to play another week, to have an opportunity to play another week, and especially have it happen versus the Bengals?
Yeah.
You're crazy.
Come on, man. Yeah.
If I were Joey Porter, I'd walk off the field and go, gotcha.
Apparently, he did something like that. It's going to be interesting when they play again. That is going to be a physical one. Let's go to Shelly in Brunswick. Shelly.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks a lot for asking. The other caller, he just stole my thunder. The one thing that I wanted to say was, you know, playing devil's advocate here. I mean, I've heard a couple of callers say that, you know, those guys are dirty and yada, yada, yada. Maybe we're just too soft. Those guys have been playing tough and physical football for a long, long time.
Yep.
And that's why they own this division.
Yep.
They're not going to get worse anytime soon. So we got to get better, and we have to get tougher. I'm sick of these coaches and players. They sit over there on the sideline. They pace the sideline like they're waiting on a bus to come by. No emotion. Nobody's getting fired up. Nobody's taking personal fouls. No one's getting any roughing the passer penalties to send a message out there that, look, you know, even though our offense isn't moving the football and we're not scoring points, this defense is out to make a statement. When you come in our building, prepare to hit the ice tub when you leave. okay? And that's not something that's been here in a long time. No one seemed to want to complain when Tom Darden was clotheslining Lynn Swann. No one seemed to complain about dirty play like the gentleman eloquently mentioned, Joe Jones slamming Terry Bradshaw on his head, okay? So even later than that, when during the Kozar years, we had a defense that no one wanted to play.
Right.
And we were killing Elway until we changed the defense at the end of the game. Instead of sending the blitz, we laid back and allowed Elway to pick us apart. Okay? So that's just one thing. The second point that I wanted to bring up was our coaching situation is going to be extremely difficult because whoever the coach that comes in here has to be willing to humble himself to the point where they've already made the point, they only want this coach to be able to be a leader in the locker room and be an evaluator of talent. They don't really want him to get involved in, you know, trying to bring players here and all that kind of thing.
Well, I think it'll be somebody who's got to be bought into this process, which could eliminate some candidates. I think it could. But when you look at it, this coach is going to be in charge of running this organization, running this team, and will work and get help with Sashi and Paul DePodesta, get his top talent guy. So he's going to have input on it. I think when you hear, for example, Hugh Jackson, I watched the interview, and I don't know if anybody else did, with Mike Silver on NFL Network this weekend. You know, he said, I have a very strong idea about how to build an organization, how to run a team, all of those things. Now, that doesn't mean that can't fit with what we're doing here, but it will be interesting to see how aligned it is. And I think that's going to be the key, alignment. And that's what they're going to get from their candidate. I have heard, as I've said, that it is going well. That there are some people who are skeptical of what's going on here in Cleveland, but there are actually some who are very intrigued by it and that they are interested and certainly open to what the Browns are doing. I think time will tell with what ends up happening here, but I have heard some good things around this football team, this coaching search from some national people who have no ties to the Cleveland Browns whatsoever. All right, when we come back, we'll talk about one of the candidates that I know in Cleveland has a lot of love. He gets us, I've heard so many people say. And we're going to talk about Matt Patricia. We're going to talk about the defensive coordinator of the New England Patriots with Eric Scalavino from patriots.com. That's going to be right after this.